Good morning. This is the continuation of our two-day council meeting. Justice Miller, are you joining us by phone?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chief.
Good morning. So before we begin as always with, I remind council that our meetings are audio cast live with real-time captioning on our California Courts website, and oftentimes portions of the meeting are videotaped or videotaped for later use on our website. So for the benefit of our online audience and for council members joining us by phone, please speak into your microphones and address each other by name so that listeners and real-time captioning readers can follow our discussion. We begin this morning's meeting by hearing from our internal committee chairs with their respective Judicial Council committee presentations. Yesterday you heard from Judge Jarr and myself, and so this morning we'll begin with Policy Coordination and Liaison Committee, Judge Kenneth So, Chair.
Thank you, Chief. The Policy Committee has met twice since the last council meeting. At those meetings, the committee took positions on behalf of the council on three bills dealing with mandatory supervision, relating to elder and dependent adults, and concerning gun violence restraining orders. But what I'd really like to talk with you about is something that's coming up soon again, and that is the contracting out bill, because that has raised its head again, and it is the subject of further discussion. And I know that Judge Walsh and David Yamasaki are intimately involved in that, because that is going to be of great concern to us still, and the legislature has, of course, until the end of August to proceed with these bills. And that bill has risen up again, and we're doing what we can to be sure that the fiscal stability of our trial courts is preserved.
Thank you, Judge So. Next, we'll hear from Justice Miller or Judge Rubin on executive and planning.
I'll give the report this time, Chief. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. I will be brief. My full report will be posted online. I'm, again, sorry I couldn't be with you in person to present my report, but as I've indicated, you'll all be glad 24 hours from now that I was not there. For those of you listening for the first time, the Executive and Planning Committee, among other responsibilities, sets the agenda for the Council's meeting, oversees the operating procedures for the Council's advisory committees, and directs the nomination process for vacancies on the Council and its advisory committees. This week, we sent out for public comment the last of the proposed rules of court that apply to advisory committees. It's a routine act that also signifies something historic for the Council and the branch, the completion of a three-year review of all rules governing Council advisory committees. The review project was launched at the Council's planning meeting in June of 2011, when the Council undertook a complete look at its governance and at itself. I believe this review is one of the more significant reforms instituted by the Chief Justice and the Council. We took a hard, hard look at all of our advisory committees, the task forces, the working groups, and committees of the Judicial Council. This was an issue that was underscored by the Strategic Evaluation Committee. The work and recommendations of that committee were so important that the Chief Justice appointed its chair and vice chair, Judge Walkup and Judge McCabe, to the Council. Since 2011, we have streamlined a number of committees and made sure that every single committee reports to an internal committee chair on the Council. And we've also strengthened the governance aspects and the annual agenda process. The advisory committees, as we all know, are extremely important because they study issues and make substantive recommendations to the Council. They help us make informed decisions about branch policy. And again, this was an historic three-year project, and we just sent out the last proposed rules for public comment. I want to talk a little bit about the nominations. This year, we evaluated almost 350 applicants. EMP evaluated, think about that, 350 applicants for various committees, and recently forwarded most of our recommendations to the Chief Justice, who under our state constitution makes the final determination. The process that we follow is set forth both in the Constitution and in the rules of court. As we review nominations, we keep in mind the Chief and Council's aspiration to select a diverse set of candidates. critical thinkers who bring a broad branch-wide perspective and cherish the role of working hard and civility during debate and discussion. Our evaluation of nominees as set forth is in a closed session, very similar to how the state bar and various state boards evaluate and review candidates. It allows us to have frank and open discussions about nominees while protecting their privacy. It also guarantees that we abide by the canons of judicial ethics as public discussions about judges and judges could or possibly be misconstrued. And finally, it ensures that the candidates and their qualifications will be discussed in a session that encourages the largest possible number of justices, judges, and others to submit their applications, which ensures that our committee is able to review a large and diverse body of applicants. And again, this year we reviewed over 350, and as we all know, we have approximately 400 that serve on these various committees. My understanding that the chief is in the process right now of reviewing our recommendations and that letters to the candidates should be going out in the next month or so. And then lastly, chief, I have had the privilege of getting to know Judge Jarre very well, talk to him almost daily, sit next to him at every judicial council meeting, and I will truly miss him. The branch, the council, and I believe all of us that sit around this table are better off because of the experience we've had working with him. So thank you, Judge Jarre. And thank you, Chief. This concludes my report.
Thank you, Justice Miller. Next, we'll hear from Justice Harry Hull from Rules and Projects.
Yes, thank you, Chief. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As far as the Rules and Projects Committee is concerned, since the June 27th Judicial Council meeting, the Rules and Projects Committee has met twice and has communicated once by email on a single matter. Specifically, on July 17th, the Rules and Projects Committee met by telephone to consider a proposal for rule amendments to retire the name, quote, Administrative Office of the Courts. The Rules and Projects Committee approved the proposal, which was adopted by the Council on July the 29th. On August 15th, the Rules and Projects Committee considered by email revised California criminal jury instructions. The Rules and Projects Committee recommends approval of the revised jury instructions, which are Item A, on the Council consent agenda today. The Rules and Projects Committee met jointly with the Executive and Planning Committee on August 19th to consider two proposals developed by the Executive and Planning Committee for new and amended rules pertaining to advisory committees. The Rules and Projects Committee approved circulation of the proposals for comment following circulation and further review by the Executive and Planning Committee and the Rules and Projects Committee. We expect one proposal to come before the Judicial Council at the October 2014 business meeting, and the other we expect will be considered by the Council at the December 2014 business meeting. I should add that at the August 19th meeting, the Rules and Projects Committee also considered a proposal from the Criminal Law Advisory Committee. The Rules and Projects Committee approved circulation of the proposal for comment following circulation and further review by the Advisory Committee and by the Rules and Projects Committee. We expect that proposal to come before the Council also at the October 2014 business meeting. During the course of my report, Chief, out of respect for Judge Jarre and his prior chairmanship of the Rules and Projects Committee, he will have noticed that I did not refer to Rupert one single time.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Next, we'll hear from Judge Jim Herman on the technology.
Thank you, Chief. Since the last Judicial Council meeting, the JCTC has had one vote by email and has also had a face-to-face meeting, which we conducted yesterday morning. The vote by email was a follow-up to our July 21st JCTC meeting, and at that meeting, the JCTC conceptually approved a budget change proposal for the appellate document management system, and there will be a presentation on that item later this morning. The vote by email was posted for 4-day public comment, and then the JCTC voted to approve. At the August Trial Court Presiding Judge Advisory Committee and Court Executive Advisory Committee meeting, I participated as chair of JCTC. On August 7th, David Yamasaki and I did a presentation on justice partners and data exchanges for courts' upgraded case management systems, and that's an issue that's becoming more and more important as many courts are making that transition. As a follow-up to this, the JCTC presented a proposal to EMP on a project, a work stream for developing technical and operational administration standards for interfacing court case management system and state justice partner information systems. And that was conceptually approved by EMP. The next morning, on August 8th, we met with the V3 court presiding judges and court executive officers, myself and Judge Diablo, the vice chair, to begin the conversation on the trial court budget advisory committee's recommendation approved by the judicial council to transition the costs off of state funding. And finally, Kurt Sutherland and I presented information on the letter distributed to the courts regarding trial court compliance with court information technology audit. And this included technical information on the framework and what the trial courts can do and the courts of review can do to be in compliance. And yesterday morning, we held a face-to-face meeting. We received reports and updates on statewide justice system partners and data exchanges, talked about the V3 issues going forward, and had reports on video remote interpreting. The Fresno court came over, the PJ, the CEO, their CIO, and made their presentation on the remote traffic trial project, as well as video remote interpreting. Other updates included the budget, specifically the Improvement and Modernization Fund and the state auditor's report and framework. And, of course, the IMF support is about 40% of the IMF supports technology projects that in turn support the trial courts. We also reviewed a report called the Preliminary Evaluation of the E-Filing Project in the Superior Court in and for the County of Orange, evaluated the project on, among other things, the cost of the program to participants, cost effectiveness for the courts, and the effect on unrepresented parties and parties with fee waivers and the ease of use for participants. And we're going to do a follow-up because in terms of self-represented litigants, they had the survey revealed that they were having some difficulties in terms of interfacing by way of an e-filing. So we're going to follow that up as an access issue. And the JCTC's review shall be a basis for a report to the legislature to be submitted to the Judicial Council for approval and transmission to our sister branch. And finally, we recognize the JCTC members whose terms are ended this fall on the Judicial Council, Judge Terry Jackson for her service going back to the original CCMS internal committee, and Mark Robinson, also a long-term member, and finally David Yamasaki, who joined us this year and who has agreed to take on the role as executive sponsor for the work stream that will address standards and interfaces between state-level justice partners and the trial courts who are upgrading the case management system. And that completes my report, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Herman. I know we'll hear from you also later on these matters.